I'm Ken Hemmings, and he is Chris Lang, and welcome to another of these regular property briefings. Again, a warm welcome to you, Chris.
Once again, I'm delighted to be here.
Before we started today, you mentioned that even seasoned investors can often overlook the basics when it comes to commercial property. So, could we perhaps start by talking about risk?
Yes, risk is an interesting element when it comes to commercial property. And we spoke a couple of episodes ago about the three different profiles that investors can have. And risk sometimes relates to the amount of borrowing. And, you know, some people are happy to borrow 85, 90%. Which is not uncommon residentially, but commercially, you generally want to peak out at about 70%. But, you know, the common understanding is that the greater the risk, the greater the reward. Now, we had a discussion about cap rates a little while ago, and generally, the lower the cap rate, the lower the risk. Now, I think it goes back to episode 18, where I provided you with a table of the different capitalisation rates for the different types of properties. Now, traditionally, retail has been the lowest cap rate, ranging about from 4.5% to 5.5% of net income. But traditionally, that has proven to be and provide the greatest growth, and a lot of people flock to it. But of late, with the global financial crisis, retailers being under threat with online shopping and things like that, that hasn't necessarily been a true reflection of the lack of risk. So the secret here is to, you really need to seek a property that has not the highest return, but really a balance, a compromise between risk and return. And that's why I guess at the moment I tend to favour office properties, because they seem to provide the balance of a reasonable return, sort of around the 8% net, and probably about 4 to 5, if you're lucky, 5.5% capital growth. So that gives you a balance. And so risk is important and something that you need to take into account as you step into the marketplace as an investor.
That would probably lead on to safeguarding your equity.
Yes, you're right. Equity preservation has got to be your number one consideration. I mean, you've got to ask yourself, what's more important, return on capital or return of capital? So in that regard, you want to make sure at the end of the deal, you at least get your money back, your equity back that you're putting into the deal. And there's no value in going after a deal that people promise you will produce 25, 30% per annum if there is a very real risk of the thing going belly up and you're not getting your money back at all. So what you want to make sure first up is that your capital is absolutely secure. And it's not only in the property that you purchase, but it also includes things like taking out the appropriate insurance to preserve and safeguard your properties. You can also take out loss of income insurance as well as for capital damage. So it's not only the building itself, but looking at the overall picture, and you need to seek advice on this, as to where are your key areas of exposure. And as far as the tenancies are concerned, you know, my recommendation is always get a bank guarantee. Don't just rely on personal guarantees, because nowadays people put their assets in their spouse's name so that if push comes to shove, there's nothing there. So you need, with the smaller properties, a minimum of 3-month bank guarantee. As you get a bit larger, probably 6 months, and ideally when you get into something bigger than that, your tenancies ought to have a 12-month bank guarantee. And that means you have absolute right to call upon those funds to meet any loss that you incur as a result of the tenant either going belly up or doing the wrong thing by you and absconding from the property.
And what about expenses?
We spoke about in the last episode expenses in the sense of outgoings that the tenant might meet, and therefore you need to keep them under control even though you're not paying them directly yourself. What I think we're probably more talking about today is the liabilities that you incur as a landlord. And while in general we have a lot of control over our assets, we quite often have relatively little control over our liabilities. And one of the things that I recommend is that you seriously look at fixing your interest rate on your mortgages. And that's, even though, you know, there might be a 0.5% lower initial rate if you're looking at a variable rate with your mortgage, a variable rate of interest. But with that is the exposure that if things really take off and the market improves and demand for loans increases, so will the interest rate. And the banks, it's just a pricing mechanism for the banks. A lot of demand for their money, put the interest rate up. And likewise, the Reserve Bank, as inflation improves and increases, will most likely, they will increase the base rate as well. So it's a false belief that you just target that extra 0.5% saving. You're better to lock it in, particularly if you've got a good lease. If you've got a 4 or 5 year lease on a property, you can fix your rates for the length of the period of the lease. You generally can't go further than that, but at least that's one variable that you don't have to worry about. It means you can sleep at night. It means irrespective of what happens to interest rates, you know your monthly interest repayments are not going to alter. Now, another liability is, and we talked about personal guarantees on the lease, you need to avoid where possible personal guarantees on a mortgage. Now, you can take out what's called a non-recourse loan, and that is where the property becomes the sole security for that loan. Now, what that will probably mean is you can only borrow up to 65%. But again, if you can afford to do that and buy a property and only borrow to 65%, it means that that property is the sole security. So your exposure is purely the property. They have no recourse to you personally or against any other assets that you may own. And so it all comes down to, I guess we're talking about risk again, but it's another way to control the risk by controlling your exposure and also your expenses along the way.
In previous podcasts, you've touched upon adding value. Would you like to cover that in this context?
Yes, adding value is an important aspect of commercial property ownership. Now, sometimes it's called super growth, but it's where you create value over and above what the market will deliver to you. I mean, if you just buy a property with a one tenant, fully let, at appropriate market rental, you're not necessarily going to get much growth over the period. You know, it'll be in line with inflation or the market, but that's about it. So what you need to look for is an angle. And as we've discussed before, it may be, if it's a multi-story building, two or three stories, the ability to create a separate strata title for each floor, or even if you buy an existing strata title, to be able to further subdivide that, which you can do legally. So you might start with one title and end up with two or three. Now, that doesn't mean you're necessarily going to sell them off individually, but what it does mean is that the next purchaser has the comfort of knowing that if push comes to shove and they get into a problem, they can sell off one, two, or three of those titles to solve their particular problem. And likewise, you can too, because it's a lot easier to sell a third of a property than it is the whole property. So effectively, you can buy a property wholesale and then carve it up so that it has the capacity to be sold from a retail perspective. Now, the other thing you can look at is that maybe you might buy a property that has a vacancy in it. Now, because it's not commanding rent, you can get it at a less than market price. But you may have in mind, or having spoken to your consultants, they tell you that the letting up for that is going to be pretty easy. Yes, you might have to give a month or so rent free, but within 6 months you can have it fully let at whatever rent is the market. And despite any incentive to get the tenant there, it adds two or three times that amount of money in additional value to your property. Then you might have signage opportunities on a building if it's on a corner or exposure to a freeway that people haven't looked at. And I'm not talking to the, you know, naming rights within the building with the tenants. I'm talking about signage to those billboards and things like that that companies head lease and then sublease on an itinerant basis to their advertising clients. But there are a whole lot of other aspects. I mean, there might be some space if you've got a larger building in a basement that's not fully utilised. It can't be used for car parking, but maybe it could be used for storage. And you can cage it out and then allow people that are not even in the building to come in and store documents and things like that. I mean, that's one of the biggest problems as more and more offices accumulate, that there needs to be nearby areas where they can do their document storage, which they can access very quickly. So there are lots of clever ways in which you can add value. So it might be the same property that someone else would look at and allow to sit there, but you have some clever ideas. And, you know, someone once said to me, the most valuable piece of real estate is the 10 or 12 centimetres between your left ear and your right ear. And so the more ideas you can bring to the table, the quicker and easier it is going to be to add value.
Once again, you've previously discussed the value of having your own consulting team. How do they fit in here?
Yeah, look, we've spoken about consulting team a number of times, and I know it keeps coming up, but it's just so crucial to your success if you're going to be a serious commercial investor. I mean, over the long haul, it's going to save you tens of thousands of dollars, both in actual out-of-pocket expenses in what they'll save you, but also it multiplies your time. It gives you flexibility and the opportunity to do a lot more when you have an expert doing the things that you're really not a specialist at doing, such as, you know, building construction, the law, arranging your finance, all those sort of things that have to be done. They're an integral part, as you know, in that nine-step process. But they're not necessarily something you should, you know, drop tools and go and learn about. And even if you did, you're never going to master them anyway. So your consulting team is really an extension of you. And if you pick your team and are loyal to them, they will return the favour in spades, not only in the skills that they bring to the table, but you'll find that they'll uncover deals or flag areas that you might run into a problem or any pitfalls that you don't even have to ask them to do. I mean, it's part of their job. They understand it. They'll flag it. Now, you might decide that, you know, you thank them for their advice, but you're still prepared to head down the path you had in mind. But at least you're given the opportunity and know that you have well-qualified set of eyes and ears out there in the marketplace that are going to, as I said, not only bring you deals, but save you from making mistakes along the way. So it's important that you have that consulting team in place and you do it before your first deal so that there's no mad rush. I mean, yes, you have to move quickly, but not with an unseemly haste. And so if you've got your consulting team in place, they can react because the relationship has already been established.
You've also made it clear to our listeners that commercial property ought to be viewed as a long-term investment. Would you care to quickly mention why that provide several major benefits?
You look at commercial real estate as a long-term investment because once you have implemented your value-add strategies and looked at things like your preventative maintenance programs, which we discussed in an earlier podcast, commercial property, because the leases are longer, means that you can happily go off on a 3 to 4 month cruise or even longer and not have to worry about it because you know the strategies in place. You know you have a good property manager looking after your interests. They can always contact you if there's an emergency, but they can handle the day-to-day things. You know the expenses are being paid. You know your mortgage is being paid. You know the BAS statements are being lodged because it's all set up and it's operating. And you've got to think about it. I mean, most really successful commercial property investors didn't actually make their money in commercial property. They made their money in the business that they ran or in the business they worked in and transferred the income and surplus profits into commercial property to preserve and grow their wealth. So, and as someone once said to me, look, you just have a look around and you don't see many stock traders over the age of 50, many option traders over the age of 40, many currency traders over the age of 30, or many future traders over the age of 25. Now, you see, they're sort of nail-biting, glued-to-your-screen professions that tend to burn people out. And they also require a fair amount of dollar income to keep them going. So what you need to think about is how do you free up your time? I mean, yes, you want to get involved in commercial property and you want to be hands-on, but the whole thing is to set up a passive stream of predictable income that can allow you to go and enjoy the lifestyle that you have planned to live in your retirement.
That probably leads us on to tenant security.
Tenant security is important because if you don't have a tenant in your building, then it's not going to be worth very much and no financier is going to lend you money to buy it or refinance it. And so the value of the property depends on the tenant. And sometimes you buy a property and it seems to be let at above market rent and you think that's great. But the problem is if that tenant leaves, then you have to go back and reflect market rent. So it's important that you have a tenant that's solid, paying a market rent, and that gives you the predictability both for your own lifestyle, as we discussed, but more important, the comfort that your banker wants to fund the deal. So it's important that you always buy a property that, as I said, has a good tenant, but if the tenant were to leave, it's the type of property that needs little tricking up to find another tenant, and the advice you're given is that the tenant could be found very quickly.
And finally, I know you're very big on the importance of having a good reputation.
Yeah, reputation is everything when it comes to commercial property. Now, there might appear to be a lot of commercial properties around, but the commercial property community, it doesn't matter where you go, is a pretty tight-knit community. And if someone does the wrong thing, the word quickly gets around. So being ethical is good business. And that doesn't mean you have to be a soft touch. I mean, what you need to be is firm about your expectations. You see, most disagreements come about because of a mismatch of expectations between two parties. And therefore, if you make your expectations clear and are quite clear on what the other party expects, you'll find that the gap won't be very big, if at all. And so it's a matter of being assertive, and we've discussed the negotiating strategies which help tie down the other party and in the process, leave them feeling good about it. But at no stage should you be trying to screw the other party as far as a deal is concerned, because what you'll find is that between reaching agreement and final contract documentation, there will be too much opportunity for a deal to fall apart. But even if you pull it off once, the chances are, if you're going to be a serious commercial property investor, you will have to deal with someone who was party to the last deal you did. And whether it's the next deal or the one after, it might be the lawyer, the accountant, if it's not the investor themselves. And the word gets around. You get your name in their little black book, and you will find all your future deals are tainted by something that you thought you could get away with in an earlier deal. So I just tell you, it's just not worth the time and trouble and you know, the feeling of, you know, having pulled the wool over someone's eyes. As I said, you get away with it once, maybe twice, but it's going to catch up with you down the track if you intend to be a serious investor.
I realise that we range far and wide today, but I think it doesn't hurt to pause every now and then to put things into perspective. So thank you for providing our listeners with such a great overview.
It was my pleasure.